Hey Braves fans, Mac McGee here with Braves Country Radio. You can find us on youtube.com/@Braves Country. We're bringing you pitch by pitch, play by play of your Atlanta Braves all postseason long. Hear us right here on the radio or find us on YouTube today. You can jump in the chat with all the Braves fans during the game and listen along as the Braves march through Choptober. That's Braves Country Radio, youtube.com/@Braves Country.
Armchair.
There's something, I'll say there's something kind of about a kid that's never played baseball.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and flat out deceived.
Why did you get so drunk?
You got drunk. I'm just really exhausted.
What's in that cup?
I'm a coax.
Do you have any idea how important
you
this is?
I'm trying to save the
pumpkin. Really, this is
you
what you're doing?
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night. Try to take over the world.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Armchair.
YouTube Live.
Radio station. The radio station you can call your own. What listeners like about our station?
I like everything. It's always on my radio.
We never stop the music, except for now, when I talk.
You're listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. We're here live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country, your first choice for Southern sports. Good afternoon. I'm Mac McGee. I don't know much, but I know one thing. 5:07 first pitch, baby boys. Let's get it.
Armchair.
Community Access Channel.
He's the armchair quarterback. He's full of beer and he's full of snacks. The All-American man.
With a cool one in his head. Yeah, the armchair. Hey, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? Hope y'all are having a great afternoon as we get set for first pitch, pitch by pitch, play by play. If you're Atlanta Braves, right here on Braves Country Radio. If you haven't found us yet, we're on YouTube. It's free. All you got to do is jump on in and enjoy the show tonight as your Atlanta Braves are trying to take the series lead. It's 1-1 heading into Philadelphia for two games. Got to take one of these two, and then you would force a game five back home in Atlanta on Saturday night. Or go out there and win tonight. We got Spencer Strider on the mound tomorrow night, and we would have an opportunity to knock Philly out, not even have to worry about a game five. That would be perfect scenario. But we'll get into all that in the hour number two. We're doing a full pregame show for your Atlanta Braves, so fret not. We are going to dive into Braves baseball leading up to first pitch 5:07. Once again, we will have pitch-by-pitch, play-by-play of your Atlanta Braves right here on Braves Country Radio. Find us on YouTube today. Should be a lot of fun tonight. I believe the Braves will score some runs. You can't keep this offense down. Like, and look, I know we had a little bit of an explosion on game two. We had the home runs by Darnold and Riley, and that was great to see. But I'm talking about, you realize the Braves have only had like 9 hits in two games? This is a really damn good offense. And to think that you're just going to continue to shut them down, I just don't. We haven't had that game where we've rattled off 6-7 runs in a few innings and really blown the door open. And it's coming. Hopefully it's tonight, because the Braves are going to need it, because the pitching is going to be the biggest question mark to me tonight. And look, remember, Aaron Nola is on the mound for Philadelphia, and he has been good against the Braves in years past, but he has not been the Aaron Nola that folks have come to expect this year. Remember, he was a little down last year. He ended up putting it together for the playoffs, but he's lost his velocity. That is for sure. And then the other thing with Aaron Nola that has really made him kind of up and down all year long is his inability to command the strike zone. So we'll get into all that in hour number two. We're going to talk some football this hour because when we're this busy during October, it is hard to talk everything, isn't it? Hard to get it all in, but we're going to commit the entire second hour of the show to Braves pregame, Braves-Phillies pregame, and talk about everything else that's going on. There's a lot of stuff going on in Major League Baseball, but we're going to decide, we decide we're going to start off today with the National Football League and then college football. We're going to look at some lines. We're going to look at some things going on in both leagues. And look, the NFL, this is really where the season gets going, right? First few weeks of the NFL, because of the expanded playoffs and because of the expanded schedule, the NFL does not have that got to win every week mode at the beginning of the season. And with all that being said, now is when you start realizing the cream starts to rise. You've got, at this point, there are teams that are out of it. There are teams that are hanging around that better get hot. And then there are the teams that are above everybody else that are trying to, they're going to try to keep it going. One of those things will be health going forward. That's the most difficult. You know, you look at a team that looked pretty promising and it's not over, but it's a little bleaker now for the Indianapolis Colts. Anthony Richardson is going to miss 4 to 8 weeks. I would say they're going to err on the side of caution. I think it's going to be closer 6 to 8 weeks if you read the report. So they do have Gardner Minshew, but we've seen this with Gardner Minshew. Minshew is very good when he comes off the bench. Minshew is good for a spot start. But when you put Minshew in week after week after week after week, teams can easily show his weaknesses and they will come straight at him. And they'll come at him with a lot of different looks. And that begins this week. So, and obviously, if there's a team that knows Gardner Minshew, it's going to be the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't even know if he'll look as good as he did this past Sunday. He may. But what's really going to come into play is as the weeks roll on, these teams start developing the game plans that can shut him down. Because he does have limitations. There's a reason why he's a backup in the NFL. He doesn't have the arm strength. There are things you can do to put him. Now, I'll give him all the credit in the world for what he's got in his repertoire. He's done a hell of a job. And I think he'll continue to be a very good backup. But that's a big blow to the Colts. Here's an interesting one. And we're going to get into the lines here in a second, but wide receiver Deontay Johnson was emphatic that he would play in week 7 against the Rams when the Steelers returned from their bye. The quote was, "Hell yeah, I'm coming back. I've been working my behind off these last 3-4 weeks. Today was one of those days to see how far I've come along. Everything looked great out there. I feel completely great and healthy. I would say I'm ready for Monday when we come back to start getting back to work." And that's the unquote. So that's good news for Steelers fans. I know they're really upset with Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator. In fact, they were chanting Fire Canada at the Pittsburgh Penguin game last night. That's how upset they are. They're at a hockey game opening night, and they are chanting for the Steelers to fire Canada during this bye week. Other news and notes. The Atlanta The Atlanta Falcons traded for wide receiver Van Jefferson. And they sent a 2025 sixth round pick to the Rams for a seventh round selection in the same year. Now, this is Jefferson's fourth year out of University of Florida. This year, he has 8 catches for 108 yards, 6'1", 200-pounder. He's played in 49 games for the Rams, making 30 starts. And he had a really good year in 2021. He's fallen off a little bit. But really what this comes down to is the Falcons are looking for depth. And at the same token, the Rams, they are overflowing with wide receiver depth. I mean, they've got Cooper Kupp came back off the IR. You've got Puka Nacua, who's had a hell of a rookie season. You've got third-year man Tutu Atwell. I mean, this team is loaded. Now, you know what ends up happening. You make a goofy trade like this, and the next thing you know, it's your room doesn't look as deep as it used to. But I think it's one of those situations where if they didn't do it, then there could have been a situation where they end up having to put them on waivers. And so they wanted to get something out of it. And it's a low risk, high reward for the Falcons as well. You're not giving up much. You're swapping a couple of low round picks. Really not the end of the, you know. And look, the other thing is Desmond Ridder probably, you could argue, had his best game last week. And they're looking to get a little more athletic. And Desmond Ridder had 329 yards. Desmond Ridder also rushed for a touchdown. He threw for a touchdown. He rushed for the biggest thing. I love what happened with Desmond Ridder. Not only did they get the win, he didn't turn the ball over. But the ball was being distributed, and you love seeing this. Pitts, London, and Jonnu Smith all had over 60 yards receiving. So I like what we're seeing so far in the growth of Desmond Ridder. Now, obviously, you want to see him put it together in back-to-back weeks. You want to see him look good again this weekend. I mean, look, he's got a home date with the Washington Commanders this week. Commanders defense has been very suspect. Not only do you want to get that win, but you'd love to see Ridder go out there. He doesn't necessarily have to throw for 300 yards, but you'd love to see him have a good, efficient game. Maybe they get more of the run game going. Maybe he doesn't have to throw as much. But so far, so good at home, right? I mean, so far, so good. They won the first two games at home. Then they come back last week and win at home. Technically, the Jacksonville game was a home game in London. But we all know that's not a true home game. So in the actual Mercedes-Benz Dome, the Falcons are 3-0. Technically, the Jacksonville game was considered a home game. But they get Washington this week. They're at Tampa Bay, at Tennessee, at home against Minnesota, and then at Arizona, and then they get the bye. You know, those are all winnable games. None of those games can you say are, you look at their roster compared to the Falcons roster, none of those teams have a superior roster. I do believe those are going to be difficult games to go in and win against Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay, Tennessee in Tennessee. Even Arizona usually plays pretty well at home. But you're not blown away going, oh man, that's a rough road. It's a pretty easy road if you compare it to other NFL schedules. So these next 5 weeks, we're sitting here at 3-2. These next 5 weeks, I think you would take another 3-2 run heading into the bye week and being 6-4. And I also believe if you're 6-4 heading into the bye week, there's a pretty darn good chance you're in first place in the NFC South. Now, you'd love to win 4 of those games and be 7-3, but let's be realistic on what the Falcons have been and what we can expect from them in this season. And when it's all said and done, I mean, this is going to be an important stretch, because when you come out of the bye week, you're at home against the Saints. That's another favorable matchup, mainly because it's at home. Then you go to the Jets. Now, who knows what the Jets look like on December 3rd? We've seen flashes of Zach Wilson, but we've also seen Zach Wilson do some head-scratching things this year. And there's also been rumors of possible trades that the Jets could be involved in. Who knows? And then they'll come home and they'll take on Tampa Bay on Sunday, December 10th. That could be for the division. If not, then you're talking about the two matchups against the Saints in the back half of the season could decide the division. After the Tampa Bay game, at Carolina, at home against Indianapolis, most likely Indianapolis will have a healthy Anthony Richardson. But the way he plays, I'm telling you, that kid plays reckless, and there's a reason. I mean, that hit he took against Tennessee, if you didn't watch the game, didn't look very rough. It looked like a typical basic takedown. It wasn't like the defender drove him into the ground and grinded. I mean, it was a tackle. But there's a big difference between getting tackled from these grown men in the National Football League and getting banged around a little bit in college football. I don't care that he played in the SEC. It's not the same. I don't care how good of an athlete you are, great of an athlete you are. At 20, 21 years old, you name the roster in the Southeastern Conference. It's not like getting hit by a 27, 28-year-old grown man who has been playing in the league 5 or 6 years and is at his apex. It hits different, as the kids like to say, right? It hits different. They'll finish the season off at Chicago and at New Orleans. I picked Atlanta to win the division beginning of the season. Nothing's really changed my mind. I get it. Tampa Bay's 3-1. Tampa Bay also just had their bye week. Tampa Bay's got a long stretch to go without a bye week. And injuries mount up in the National Football League. The play, how you're playing, adjustments mount up. They have a tough task this weekend at home against Detroit. Man, remember when Detroit and Tampa Bay, that used to be a good old-fashioned NFC North battle when I was growing up as a kid. In fact, one of the best runs you'll ever see in your life was Barry Sanders against this Bucko Bruce creamsicle jerseys that the Buccaneers used to rock. I believe they're supposed to wear those again this year, and that might be the game. But they're going to play the Lions. This is what Tampa Bay has on their gauntlet the rest of the year. They're playing the Lions. Home against the Falcons, at the Bills, at the Texans. They'll get the Titans at home, at the San Francisco 49ers. This is the difference between the Falcons schedule and the Buccaneers schedule, because the Buccaneers won the division last year. They're going to be at the Colts. And they'll finish off. It was at December 17th at the Packers. That's going to be a tough one. And they're at home back-to-back weeks against the Jaguars and the Saints. And they are at home, but that's not going to be an easy game. Saints usually play the Bucs tough, and we know the Jaguars should be rolling as when they come in there on Christmas Eve. They'll finish at the Panthers, and that's a bit of an advantage to Tampa Bay because they're going to be playing a really bad Panthers team that's probably – they'll probably have a win by then, but they won't have many. While the Falcons and Saints are battling. I'm still not sold on the Saints. I'm just not. I can't get behind the Saints. I get that they're 3-2. I get that they just had a big win. And it was an impressive win, but then again, you can make an argument that the New England Patriots are possibly bottom three teams in the NFL, bottom two. The only team that comes to mind that's worse than New England Patriots right now, as we speak on week six, the only team that I think of when you say who's worse than the Patriots, Panthers. I believe Belichick has absolutely lost that locker room. I don't think Belichick has even checked in. I think he's checked out. There's been rumors now that Belichick wants to go elsewhere. And that may be the case. I don't get the goofy theory where it says he's wanting to leave that team in shambles, so when he leaves, the Patriots aren't any good. What does he gain from that? All you're going to really do is give the Patriots a lot of draft picks. So I would be more willing to bet that Belichick's planning on staying, and he's essentially tanking, so he can go get Caleb Williams. But back to what's going on in the National Football League in this week. I mean, this is where the rubber is going to meet the road for the next few weeks. You're going to see some separation. You're going to see some teams go in with high hopes here into week six and low hopes by the time they come out. You know, an interesting game that's taking place over in London, they're playing at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, is that Ravens-Titans game. Tennessee's getting 4, Baltimore, I mean, on paper, they look like the better team, but they didn't play a very good game against Pittsburgh. That travel to London's always goofy. They're going to be physically banged up. Every time the Steelers and the Ravens play, that is a physical ball game, and they're about to play another physical football team. That is going to be a smash-mouth rock fight in London. This is not going to be the game that's going to sell fans in that stadium who might be on the fence going, do I like American football? This is not going to be the game because there's not going to be a lot of points scored unless the defense is scooping scored pick six type of stuff, because Titans are going to try to smash it. Ravens are going to try to smash it. They're both going to run into brick walls. The Titans gave up a lot of yards on the ground, and a lot of that was schematic, but you know they're going to be going in there fired up. But that's a huge game. It's a huge game for both teams. The Ravens don't want to fall to 3-3, and the Titans damn sure don't want to go to 2-4. You go to 2-4, Jacksonville's starting to look a lot better. You could be in everybody's rear view window quickly. Falcons game is big. There are some games. It's interesting. In the National Football League, there are some huge spreads. You don't normally see this many huge spreads. Panthers are a 14-point underdog to the Dolphins. The Bills are a 14-point favorite against the Giants. I'm not sure if those lines are big enough. I'm really not. You don't normally see these lines that big in the National Football League. The Chiefs are a 10.5-point favorite against the Broncos in Kansas City. That line is definitely not big enough. There's no way in hell that line's big enough. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the lines in the National Football League and in college football as we're getting rolling here on week 6 in the NFL, week 7 in college football. And there are some big, big games this weekend on Saturday. We'll be back in a flash here on Armchair Quarterback Radio on Braves Country today. We'll be back in a flash. Braves, Phillies, tonight. We're rolling towards that. Pre-game show is on the way. Keep it locked in here. Braves Country
on YouTube Live. Covering the AFC South and NFC South along with the rest of the NFL. Subscribe and like us today. Your first choice for sports talk.
Braves Country on WQEE and YouTube.com/@Braves Country.
I hear these fools on TV talking about defund the police and things like that. We need police reform and prison reform and things like that. Because you know who ain't going to defund the cops? Rich neighborhoods. So that notion they keep saying that, I'm like, wait a minute, we just going to leave. Who are people supposed to call? Ghostbusters? When we have crime in our neighborhoods?
ACC football covered like no other here on the Armchair Quarterback.
Reggie Gillespie dives into the end zone. The winning points for North Carolina State.
And the teams come together in the end zone, pushing, shoving between the back and the heels as Gillespie has scored the winning points, his fifth rushing TD. But these teams need to be separated. The emotion boils over on the last play of the game as Gillespie goes to the end zone. And it's a sea of Carolina blue and state red.
And Carruthers gets into it, and they've doused him. And now we've got a big brawl out on the field. Marring would have been the 200th victory for Bobby Bodman. Look at this. That's an ugly mess down there. This is ugly. Starting to get it cleared up down there, although there's still some bodies flying around.
ACC football, backyard brawls all year long.
Hey folks, this is Mark White with The Mark White Show, and you can tune in to The Mark White Show every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on Rock 99 WQEE The Key, the home of Southern sports and talk.
Welcome. Hey Braves fans, Mac McGee here with Braves Country Radio. You can find us on YouTube.com/@Braves Country. We're bringing you pitch by pitch, play-by-play of your Atlanta Braves all postseason long. Hear us right here on the radio or find us on YouTube today. You can jump in the chat with all the Braves fans during the game and listen along as the Braves march through Choptober. That's Braves Country Radio, YouTube.com/@Braves Country.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why do you want that beer so bad?
Because he's thirsty, dummy.
Welcome back! Braves Country. Today, we're doing a little bit of Armchair Quarterbacks with the football talk and top of the hour. We will be bringing you Braves Country today pregame show. here on Braves Country Radio. Find us today at youtube.com/@Braves Country. If you're searching for it, just put Braves Country Radio in YouTube and you'll find us. And also good afternoon to all of everyone on the WQEE and independent affiliates that have picked us up for today and tonight's action. And if you're listening to us on radio and you can't find us later on radio, once again, just go to YouTube. And one thing you will like about going to the YouTube feed is on Braves Country Radio is a lot of interaction with folks. And, you know, basically we all feel each other's pain. And that was a rough one. That was a rough one on Monday night when they came back. That was incredible. It felt like the sky was falling. You're like, man, what is going on with our offense? Yes, Wheeler's a phenomenal pitcher. I'm not taking anything away from him. But for him to just absolutely blow the doors off of us, you kept going, man, all right, here they go. They're going to see him again. They finally cracked his code and was able to get to him. And I don't believe he's going to pitch as well the second time. If we see him a second time, it would be game 5 on Saturday because if we have him going a second time in 5 days, the Braves see a pitcher that many times through the lineup in a 5-day period, that's an advantage to Atlanta. It's going to be a higher scoring game. And then, so I keep saying, if we can just get it back to Atlanta, we're going to win this thing. I don't think we lose tomorrow. I don't think Spencer Strider is going to go in there. I think you're going to see an elite performance from Spencer Strider. We'll get more into that here in a little bit. Okay. Some games of interest. We're going to go ahead and hit the SEC real quick. Hit those point spreads and everything. There are some big spreads. Some blowout cities coming for the SEC. I mean, Georgia at Vanderbilt, 31.5. And I don't know how in the world. I remember when I was young to betting and taking these games. I could figure it in my head that 31.5 points was too big of a spread. But you watch, you as you get older and you watch these games, you see them unfold. Much like I talked about last week, if people tuned in to the Saturday morning kickoff show, the Armchair Quarterbacks kickoff show, if people tuned into that, you know I was the lone wolf on that stage that was saying, Georgia's going to pound Kentucky. How in the world are they going to cross the 50 many times? Georgia's going to methodically beat them, da-da-da-da-da. I got a lot of pushback. And there's not many times where I do victory laps, but I got to do a victory lap on that one. Because I know what it is. A lot of these kids, when we're talking back and forth about this, they think in their heart of hearts, if you were to ask them, they probably think that they have more knowledge about the game of football than I do because I'm so involved in the world of baseball. That it couldn't be further from the truth. I've been watching football, college football, NFL, for 40 years. It is by far my second favorite sport, and it's not particularly close. Baseball's king in my world. That doesn't mean I don't know the game of football. Just the more that you learn about baseball and fall in love with the game of baseball, it becomes number one. But football is right there with it. And one of the reasons, I'll be honest with you, one of the reasons why it fell out of favor with me as time moved on is that football got lesser and lesser football-like. Baseball's pretty much stayed the same. There's been a few changes in baseball, but nothing to the point where you're like, I don't recognize this sport anymore. The ticky-tack flags that they call nowadays, all the rules they've implemented, football is not what it was when I was growing up. It used to be hard, smash mouth, knock 'em, sock 'em, Christian Okoye running over you. Atwater coming through the line, Ronnie Lott coming through the line. You didn't dare go over the middle because you knew you were going to get your clocks cleaned. And it just, as they change the rules, the game's not the same. Probably for the better when you talk about the health for these kids. I get that part of it, but it's not a better product to watch. Well, you watch some of these games now, and they're up and down the field because there's zero defense being played. That's not great foot. It really isn't. Like, people think, oh, that's so exciting. It's 62-60 game. I will take a 13-10 smash mouth, every yard counts game any day of the week. But anyways, I may be in the minority on that, but I don't believe I am. I think a lot of folks north of, we'll say, 35 to 40 years old, you get them honest engine talking, they miss the game. They miss the game that we once were. Yeah, we grew up on this romanticism of, man, you were a warrior. You were a gladiator. Now we're not too far from two-hand touch below the waist. But anywho, back to the rest of the story. Georgia blowing out Vanderbilt 31.5 points. There's no way I could take Vanderbilt. I don't know if I'm going to. I hate laying a lot of points. I just do. So I normally steer clear of games that are that big. But there's no way. I wouldn't even tease Vanderbilt. They're an absolute joke. It really is dumbfounding because they look like they were turning the corner last year. And now this year, they're getting blown out. I mean, they got blown out by Florida. Florida's not a great team this year. They never were competitive in that game. Once again, we talked about this last week, but they've beaten Hawaii and Alabama A&M. It is a close game against Hawaii. That's it. Since then, it's been loss after loss after loss. I mean, you even lose it to UNLV. UNLV, this is not, first of all, this isn't basketball season. This ain't the running Rebels. Tark Sharks aren't out there. Larry Johnson's not getting lobs from Ogman. But UNLV has been better in the past. That's not even a good UNLV team. So I'm steering clear of that. If I take it in any shape or form, I may even tease it the other direction so I can get a lower number for Georgia. But I feel pretty confident that Georgia's going to beat them by 5 touchdowns or more. Probably, if you were asking me what the score is on that game, this is one of the reasons why I'd be a little nervous taking the over-under in it. The over-under is 56. I'm probably going Georgia 52-0. I don't know how Alabama's going to score on Georgia. Not conventionally. Yeah, something goofy can happen, but not conventionally. Vanderbilt's going to put together a drive against that Georgia team. Stop it. Alabama, 19-point favorite against Arkansas. This is not a good Arkansas team. I thought Arkansas was turning the corner. Man, have they regressed. 19 points. Because Alabama has been sporadic offensively, that to me is a high number. So I'm probably avoiding that game altogether. The over-under is 46.5. That seems low. This Alabama defense isn't one that shuts folks down anymore. So they'll probably give up 14-17 points, and if they do that, the over is going to hit. Tennessee. Now, this is a fun one. Tennessee is at home against Texas A&M. They're giving up 3.5 points. It was lower early in the week, and I talked about grabbing the money line. At 3.5, I'm probably staying away. Because now the money line has shot up, and now there's not a lot of value in this bet. I believe Tennessee is going to find a way to win that game because it's in Knoxville. That is a fun game. I'm looking forward to that one. The over-under is 55.5. That's probably a touch high. A&M's defense has played much better the last few weeks. I don't believe Tennessee is going to be able to score a ton of points, and A&M's offense is just an absolute – it's been a mess for a long time, and it hasn't gotten much better this year. Here's another fun one. South Carolina is a 2-point favorite at home against Florida, and the knee-jerk reaction from most fans is Man, Florida's 4-2. South Carolina's 2-3. In fact, we have a buddy that we're in this group chat, and I didn't see the text till much later, so I'm pretty sure he took the bet. But he sent a text in the group chat the other day. The day of the UCLA Washington State game. And his exact text was, "Am I missing something? Washington State's undefeated." Which is kind of funny because we had actually talked about that game on the Armchair Quarterback show on Saturday mornings. And I talked about the fact that I thought UCLA would probably get the W, and that if nothing else, I love the under, which the under was way under. That thing was even close. But your average Joe sees undefeated and they think that's a good team. You got to look at who they play. You also have to look at matchups. South Carolina tends to match up well against Florida. That is going to be a grind of a game. The over-under is 51.5, and I don't love taking the over in that one. Florida getting 2 points, what I would be more likely to do if you just wanted to stay in the same game would probably be, and I don't think I'm going to take it. I have to look at other numbers as we get closer to the week due to our locks and everything. But just off the cuff, I'm thinking you take Florida and the under on a teaser. Because Florida should be able to stay within a touchdown of South Carolina. Unless you really believe in South Carolina, then obviously you can take it the other way and you'd be getting 4 with South Carolina. But I don't know what to make of South Carolina. Their defense isn't what I thought it would be. Radler hasn't looked like we thought he would look. These are two not very good teams, but it's misleading because Florida's 4-2. But the two losses Florida's had have been on the road, and they've gotten punched in the mouth and not responded. That's a 3:30 kickoff, by the way. Auburn LSU, 7 o'clock, ESPN. That's a fun one. Auburn getting 11 points against LSU's defense, that seems like a lot. Really does. Now, I know Auburn is not elite, and you can't get caught up in the moment of the fact that they took Georgia 11 rounds. You got to remember something big picture. Auburn was at home, and that was the first start for Georgia's quarterback on the road in the SEC. There was a lot of factors, and Auburn's defense is a tad underrated. LSU's offense is very good. The biggest question I have is, can Auburn put together enough scoring drives to stay with them? Because LSU's defense has been a sieve. They looked somewhat impressive in the first half of the Florida State game, but what we come to find out later on, Florida State just wasn't hitting on all cylinders. Once they came out of the locker room, FSU just blew them out. So I almost have to take that, because it was the first half of the first game of the season, you almost have to take that out of the equation. I went back and watched that game a few times. If you really look at it, there were missed assignments, Florida State, there were drop balls. I mean, you name it. The last SEC game of the day, Kentucky, 2.5-point favorite at home against Missouri. That's a fun one. I've gotten to where I really look forward to this rivalry. They tend to be really close games. I would tend to think Kentucky at home, bouncing back from an embarrassing loss last week. I like Kentucky, but I will say this. Missouri's a dangerous team. Though it's in Lexington, Missouri is a very dangerous team. That to me is the best game of the day in the Southeastern Conference. It's not even close. But if I was going to rank the best games to watch this weekend in the Southeastern Conference, it would be Kentucky, Missouri 1, Tennessee A&M 2. And then number three really hinges on what we talked about, the Auburn offense. Auburn LSU is intriguing. If Auburn can't get the ball going, then it's probably Florida South Carolina, because those two are just going to get down in the mud with it. They're just going to get in there and just South Carolina Florida games always seem to come down to some goofy play that you can't forecast that turns the tide of the game. And they tend to be lower scoring affairs. They also tend to be games that really live off the turnover. Looking around the top 25, Indiana, Michigan, I mean, my God, Cupcake City. In when is Michigan going to play anybody? We looked at it the other day. I believe it's November 11th. If they lose one game, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to start having a hard time putting Michigan or Penn State or any of the others in the playoffs, because you're not playing anybody outside of that. What? Just because you get a win, because we know Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State are all going to play each other, right? But you do a round robin of that, and they all get a loss. Where do you go? Let's say they all get a loss against each other. I'm not putting two of them in. Where do you go? The only way I'm putting two in is if you have like an undefeated Michigan and either Ohio State or Penn State possibly lost a very, very close game. And then you could make the argument. Ohio State playing Purdue, another just snore fest. Utah is at home against Cal. That should be a dominant game. There's some lopsided games. But this Oregon-Washington game, this is the game of the day. Talked about it the other day. I cannot believe this is not the night game on ABC. It's a 3:30 kickoff. It's not fair to the West Coast fans. 12:30 local time. The fans ought to be able to go out there and tailgate and raise cane and enjoy the game. So Oregon actually gets a big advantage because it is an early kickoff. I know the fans will be there. They'll be fired up. But that's an advantage for Oregon. Oregon's getting 3 points. Miami, North Carolina no longer has the shine. Miami should not be ranked. They're ranked 25th. They're barely hanging on with their fingernails. And I get it. It realistically won't matter if North Carolina takes care of business on Saturday night. But that's the Saturday night game. Miami, North Carolina over Oregon, Washington. That's a bad decision by ABC. Who knows if Braves and Phillies will still be going. Obviously, be locked into that if it's going on. But if not, sorry, ABC. I'm watching USC Notre Dame. USC Notre Dame 7:30. Notre Dame's got a chance to put the kibosh on the USC national championship run, which is a farce to begin with. USC, first of all, they're not going undefeated. Second of all, they get in the playoffs. Say they do run the table, they get in the playoffs. You think that USC defense is going to be able to match up with any of the top teams in the country? Please. Florida State is at home against Syracuse. Syracuse is 4-2. I get that. But Syracuse, first of all, they looked terrible on the road last week at North Carolina. They looked bad at home against Clemson. The 4-0 is a little disingenuous because it's against Colgate, Western Michigan, Purdue, and Army. Syracuse did this last year. Syracuse was 6-0 at one point and then lost five of the last six games, or heck, maybe it was six of the last. It was a dumpster fire. Now, Syracuse is a different level than a lot of other programs. They're just trying to make the playoffs. I mean, the bowl. They're not making the playoffs. The bowl games. So they're two wins away from achieving that. And they'll get there. They're at home against Boston College this year. They're at home against Pittsburgh. They're at home against Wake Forest. They've got a game that they'll match up well with, and that'll be a good one at Georgia Tech. But they'll get one of those. They're at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's not a good football team. They'll get two more wins, but at Florida State, I can't imagine that they're going to put up a fight. It's 17.5-point favorite. Feels like that line should be a little bigger, but Florida State didn't blow out Virginia Tech, and that might have a lot to do with it. It's a noon kickoff on ABC. I know Florida State fans are excited that they're getting these home games, but man, noon, ugh. Florida State doesn't tend to come out the gates well on these early kickoffs. So I'd be a little nervous taking the 17.5 points. Next week is the big one. Florida State is gearing up for that, and you got to be careful to look ahead. You don't want to get the looky-loo. Next week, they're at home against Duke, and that'll be a fun game. Rest of FSU's schedule looks like this: at Wake Forest, at Pittsburgh, very winnable games. Then at home against Miami, they should beat Miami. They definitely have a much better team than Miami. The only way they don't beat Miami is that they just take it, they don't take it seriously. I don't see that happening in a rivalry game. So I feel like Florida State's going to come out and show out. Then they play North Alabama and at Florida. They've got a better team than Florida, but it is in the swamp. My guess would be that's a night game. It won't be an easy win for Florida State. Not in the swamp. It just isn't. But if Florida State can get past the looky-loo this week and get ready for Duke, they win that Duke game, the FSU train could be headed to the playoffs. I did not think that they would be undefeated at this point going into the season, to be perfectly honest. I thought they were going to lose the game at Clemson, and they damn near did, and I thought they'd have a chance to right the ship if they got to the ACC title game, and that's how they would punch their ticket. I thought they would get a close loss and then punch their ticket that way. But they found a way to win that game at Clemson, and now things are starting to line up. But I've got to see a better performance out of Jordan Travis in a big game than what we saw against Clemson. Because against Clemson, and I noticed they did it again last week, they were throwing these 50-50 balls up. And they keep saying, oh, well, in fact, the color commentator said, it's more like 90-10. Because if you really look at it, these guys are so tall and so athletic that they're just skying. Then why the hell aren't they catching the ball? Because they throw these 50-50 balls up, and they're not completing the passes. And every time I see this, it reminds me of when Mark Richt was the offensive coordinator at Florida State, and they were playing for the national title against Oklahoma the 2000 year. The year that Winky won the Heisman. And they were doing a version of this. They were throwing jump balls. And it looked like they didn't have a damn game plan. Because remember, Mark Richt was going back and forth between Tallahassee and Athens the entire time getting ready to become the new head coach at Georgia. And a lot of Florida State fans have never forgiven him for that. Because he was going back and forth. He must have made 4 to 5 trips going back to Athens when he's getting ready to play for a national championship. And the whole thing for the fan base was, that's fine, you want to take the job. If you don't want to be in the damn building and get ready for the national title game, then you need to just give the reins to somebody else. But if not, if you really want to make a run at this, then whatever needs to be done can wait till after the national title game. And he was just chucking it up. That's all it was. And what happened? Not only did Florida State lose the game, they scored 2 points When did you ever know a Bobby Bowden offense to score 2 points? Back then I can remember reading those reports, and me and my dad would talk about it. I'd say, man, I think they'd be better off just telling him to hit the road and let Bowden design the game plan. That's not what they did, and the rest is. And this is what this feels like. You're not, if you get a jump ball here and there, yeah, that's great, that's cute, okay, but that's not a sustainable offense. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Jordan Travis is not healthy, so they don't want him out there running, so they're just chucking it up, and they figure they got the athletes against teams like Virginia Tech, but you're gonna have to buckle down and come up with a real game plan. You get in the playoffs, you do that 50-50 crap against Georgia or whoever they face, they're gonna have much better athletes on the other end, and you may not get interceptions, but you're not gonna get a lot of success. Other games, that's about it in college football as far as big games. USC Notre Dame, that's a fun one. I'm hedging towards taking Notre Dame -2.5. What I want to see is where it falls on the team total for Notre Dame. It'll probably be somewhere around the 27 to 29 range. I'm going to take Notre Dame in the over on the team total. I just don't think Southern Cal can stop anybody. How are they going to stop Notre Dame? Notre Dame's got good athletes. Real quick in the NFL, before we have to hit the top of the hour and jam on about the... We're going to get ready for Braves versus Phillies Game 3. Pitch by pitch is coming your way. 5:07 first pitch. It's an early game today. Once again, Titans getting 4 points in London. I'm really thinking I'm going to take the Titans on that one. Not that the Titans are a great football team, and not that Baltimore's a bad football team, but it's in London. It's going to be a low-scoring game, and if you're going to give me 4 points in a low-scoring game, I don't care who the team is. I want those points in my pocket. That's a lot to cover, especially how we know most NFL games come down to one possession. Falcons -2.5 against the Commanders. I'm taking that all day long. I'm more likely to grab the money line, but I am taking that all day long. I think the Falcons are going to get the W. Bears and Vikings don't have a lot of interest in this except for the over. The over-under is 44.5. That's bad. That's low. Bengals and Seahawks. Seahawks +3 at Cincinnati. Cincinnati struggling a little bit, looked a little better last week. Seattle is getting points. If I get that 3.5, 4, 4.5, might have to buy a point or so. I'm probably going to take Seattle just because I think it's going to be a close game. And remember, Seattle's also coming off the bye. So there's that as well. 49ers and Browns, 49ers, 5.5-point favorite. This is a trap game. I'm staying away from it. It feels like a game where the Niners ought to blow the Browns out of the water, but they're going east. It looks like it's going to be bad weather. I'm steering clear of it. And there's not a lot of value on the money line, so I'm steering clear of that one. Panthers and Dolphins, no way the Panthers hang with the Dolphins. 14 points. You got to take the Dolphins on that one. Jaguars are a 4-point favorite against the Colts. I don't like that line for Jacksonville. I think the Colts can cover that. The Jaguars, they continue to... Until the Jaguars start performing in the red zone, more efficient in the red zone, it's a hard, hard ask to ask them to give up 4 points in a division game. Saints and Texans. New Orleans is 1.5-point favorite. I believe Houston's going to win that game. Patriots and Raiders, holy dumpster fire, Batman. Yeah. Really don't have an opinion on this, but Vegas is favored by 3. Cardinals are 7-point favorite at the Rams. I'm sorry. Rams are 7-point favorite at home against the Cardinals. Rams should be able to cover that, but it's a division game. I don't like the big spreads in division games. Jets or 7-point dog at home against the Eagles. This feels like the Eagles should blow them out of the water. The Eagles haven't been as dominant, though. They are 5-0. It's with smoke and mirrors. This is a stay-away game for me. Lions at Bucks. That's one of my favorite ones of the weekend. Just want to. I don't have a strong opinion on the fact that Lions are giving up 3. They're at Tampa Bay. We're going to see what Tampa Bay is all about coming off a bye week. This is a game that Tampa Bay should win if they're for real. This is a game that the Lions should realistically, on paper, win the game. They're giving up 3 points. I think that might be a trick. It's a trick-em game. Giants, Bills. Man, the Giants just look like they look bad. How in the hell they even have a win? 14-point spread. And the Cowboys are at the Chargers Monday night. By the way, Giants-Bills is a Sunday night game. Good God. Please let there be some baseball on Sunday night. I am not watching that junk. Cowboys and Chargers. Dallas, 2-point favorite at the Chargers. I just feel like the Cowboys are going to bounce back. The Chargers stink. Cowboys, I believe, stayed out there because back-to-back games out on the West Coast. I think they're going to out-physical the Chargers. Love Dallas in that game. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to step aside for a second, get you set up for the pregame show. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Braves Country. Today, coming your way on Braves Country Radio. Keep it locked in. Let's get it. Game 3, baby! Game 3. Country today. We're talking Southern sports. We go live to 5 weekdays right here on WQEE. Braves Country Today, Southern Sports Talk with the voice of Braves Country Baseball, Mac McGee. Joined every day from sports analysts from all over Braves Country, talking college football, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and what's trending in the world of sports. Braves Country Today, we go live to 5 weekdays right here on WQEE. Lineup for Yesterday by Ogden Ash. A is for Alex, the great Alexander. More goose eggs he pitched than a popular gander. B is for Bresnahan, back of the plate. The Cubs were his love and McGraw his hate. C is for Cobb, who grew spikes not corn and made all the basemen wish they weren't born. D is for Dean, the grammatical diz. When they asked who's the tops, said correctly, I is. E is for Evers, his jaw in advance, never afraid to tinker with chance. F is for Fordham and Frankie and Fish. I wish he were back with the Giants, I wish. G is for Gehrig, the pride of the stadium. His record, pure gold. His courage, pure radium. H is for Hornsby, when pitching to Raj, the pitcher would pitch, then the pitcher would dodge. I is for me, not a hard-hitting man, but an outstanding all-time, incurable fan. J is for Johnson, the big train in his prime, was so fast he could throw 3 strikes at a time. K is for Keeler, as fresh as green paint, the fastest and mostest to hit where they ain't. L is for LaHoy, whom Clevelanders love. Napoleon himself, with glue in his glove. M is for Matty, who carried a charm in the form of an extra brain in his arm. N is for Newsom, Bobo's favorite kin. You ask how he's here, he talked himself in. O is for Ott, of the restless right foot. When he leaned on the pellet stay put. P is for Plank, the arm of the A's. When he tangled with Matty, games lasted for days. Q is for Don Quixote, Cornelius Mack. Neither Yankees nor years can halt his attack. R is for Ruth, to tell you the truth. There's no more to be said, just R is for Ruth. S is for speaker, swift center field tender. When the ball saw him coming, it yelled, I surrender. T is for Terry, the giant from Memphis, whose 400 average you can't overemphasize. U would be Ubel if Carl wore a Cockney, but we say Hubble in baseball like football in Rockney. V is for Vance, the Dodgers' very own Dazzy. None of his rivals could throw as fast as he. W, Wagner, the bow-legged beauty, short, closed to all traffic with Honus on duty. X is the first of two X's in Fox, who was right behind Ruth with his powerful socks. Y is for Young, the magnificent Psy. People battled against him, but I never knew why. Z is for Zenith, the summit of fame. These men are up there. These men are the game. Lineup for yesterday, Ogden Ash, January 1949, Sport Magazine. Hey Braves fans, Mac McGee here with Braves Country Radio. You can find us on youtube.com/@Braves Country. We're bringing you pitch by pitch, play by play of your Atlanta Braves all postseason long. Hear us right here on the radio or find us on YouTube today. You can jump in the chat with all the Braves fans during the game and listen along as the Braves march through Choptober. That's Braves Country Radio, youtube.com/@Braves Country.